If there is anything analogous to original sin in Islam, it's our tendency to see ourselves as merely these creatures of the flesh, as something that is merely human, instead of being an image that is formed after God, in the image of God, having divine spirit. And one of the tasks of the Quran is to have people remember their divine source and divine origin.
Islamic scholar, associate professor of Islam, Colgate University, Ahmed Safi, talking about what the Quran is there for Muslims. Greetings and welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about the Quran. That's the Islamic view. What is it? Our call-in number during this hour as we talk with and continue our conversation with Dr. Adam Francisco, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Adam Francisco is Assistant Professor of History at Concordia College in Bronxville, New York. He's author of the forthcoming book, Martin Luther and Islam. Dr. Francisco, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
We're going to go to some email here from our listeners. This one comes from Jeff in McKinney, Texas. He says, I've read through the Quran several times, and each time I do, one thing becomes more clear. This is the most sensible and natural religion I've ever heard. Man is not guilty. He just needs to do what is right to keep God happy. Those of this religion are good. Everyone else is second class. There are lots of beautiful, submissive women waiting for the practitioner, people who speak my language, pray like I do, agree with me, that are all good people. Everyone else needs to look out because God gives me a pass since I'm on the right team. Isn't this the religion any natural man would create? If the world were all about nationalism and good behavior, Islam would be the answer. Sadly, the Quran does nothing to address humanity's need for more than just a prophet. We don't need a militant absentee tyrant. We need a savior. What do you make of those comments, Dr. Francisco?
Very perceptive interpretation of Islam or presentation of Islam. In fact, Muslims themselves will call Islam the dinul fitra, the religion of nature. Many Islamic scholars say that Islam is so natural that there really is no need for any revelation except for ethical concerns. The Quran, in fact, some would go so far as to say that apart from the legal or ethical injunctions, it is completely unnecessary because everything about God revealed in the Quran is something that man can know using his own reason.
So it is, in that sense, would you say natural man's religion par excellence?
I would say that, and Luther would say that, in fact, that it is, if you're looking for a natural legal religion, don't turn to Rome, he would say, turn to Islam.
Paul of Milwaukee writes this. It is said that the Quran can only be understood in Arabic, if true. If not, what version in print, in English, does Dr. Francisco recommend for the thinking Christian of Issues, Etc.? Text only or annotated, asks Paul. That's his first question from Milwaukee. Dr. Francisco?
That's a really good question. It depends. If you're comfortable reading the King's English, Abdullah Yusuf Ali's translation is really good. It's revered even in the Islamic world. The Saudi Arabia, the mosques in Mecca and Medina sponsor that translation as the best interpretation of the Quran, because, of course, it is an interpretation since it's out of its Arabic. If you're looking for something a little more readable, the Oxford Orientalist J.M. Rodwell is pretty good. You can find that in Borders. You can find Abdullah Yusuf Ali in Borders. And if I can give a hint to the listeners, if you go in Google and just type in free Quran, there are all sorts of sites that, if you're willing to give up your email address to them, they will send you a free Quran.
The one that I have sitting in front of me, Paul, is from a series called Sacred Writings, and it's edited by Yaroslav Pelikan. And the Quranic translation into English is from Ahmed Ali, who apparently it was chosen for this edition because it is widely accepted by Muslims in the West. So there are some other suggestions. Another question from Paul in Milwaukee. He says, Dr. Francisco is an historian. Does he have a sense of the Quran and Muslim theological traditions as clear forces for 700 years of Islamic expansion, or the Quran merely as a rationalization for mundane motives as power and greed, or a blend of the two? Your thoughts there?
Certainly, the first 700 centuries of Islam was motivated by the ideology of the Quran. There is a famous sermon that Muhammad gave just before he died that's recorded in the traditions or the hadith, but it is the same message that you find in the Quran. And Muhammad says that he was called by God to fight the unbelievers and to fight until the world confessed that there is no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet. And after he dies, that's exactly the Arab Muslims and then later on Turks and Persians and everybody else who embrace Islam seem to be following Muhammad's orders.
Is this picking up on Paul's question last? Is the concept that we hear a lot about the House of Islam, the House of War, these two realms as the world is divided by many in Islam? Is that a concept drawn directly from the Quran itself?
Actually, no. The terms themselves are not in the Quran, but the theologians drew up this doctrine based on the Quran and the Hadith, but you can't find the terms in the Quran or the Hadith itself. No.
Here again, a question from Paul. It is said that the United States government, perhaps reflective of its people, has failed to adequately appreciate the influence of the Quran and militant faith on the actions of terrorists and on insurgents and Islamic factions in Iraq. If so, what one writing would you like to have required reading for the high councils of U.S. government to try and dispel ignorance and bad judgment? That's a big question, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, far be it from me, but I'm quite fond of Michael Scheuer. He's since resigned, but he used to work for the Central Intelligence Agency. He was in charge of Alex Station, which was the unit charged with hunting down Osama bin Laden. He's written two books. One is called Imperial Hubris, and the subtitle is Why the West is Losing the War on Terror. And he says that one of the primary reasons is because we haven't taken Islam seriously. He's got another book called Through Our Enemy's Eyes, which is it traces the history of Osama bin Laden and looks into the future and offers suggestions for how we might approach a resurgent Islam. He's quite it's hard to pin him down on the political spectrum. He's castigated by conservatives and liberals alike, and I think that's kind of why I like him, because he's a scholar, and he's not ideologically driven, but rather driven by what he perceives as the truth.
Here's a first of several quick questions from Bob in Jefferson City. He listens on KMCV. Can we say that Muslims seek to impose their religion on others, whereas Christians seek to expose their religion to others, that they might see our good works and glorify the Father in heaven? With less than a minute to respond, Dr. Francisco, how would you respond to Bob's question?
I think it'd be more accurate to say that they seek to impose Islamic law or Islamic norms, but not necessarily the religion. Although they certainly would like that. There's a missionary enterprise in the U.S. and in the Western world that does attempt to convert Christians and others, but they're more interested in changing the political infrastructure.
We're talking with Dr. Adam Francisco about the Quran tonight on Issues, Etc. Dr. Francisco is assistant professor of history at Concordia College in Bronxville, New York, and he's author of the forthcoming book, Martin Luther and Islam. We're taking your email and your phone calls, issues@kfuo.org or 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, a response to one of Bob's questions from Jefferson City. He says, can we say that Muslims seek to condemn non-Muslims, whereas Christians seek to save non-Christians? I am referring to John 3:17. God sent his son into the world not to condemn the world, but that through him the world might be saved. some perceptive questions from Bob in Jefferson City, contrasting the overall views of Islam and of Christianity. And there are more emails on the other side of this break. We're talking about the Quran, the holy book of Islam. You know, they say, or at least Muslims believe, that it was dictated to Muhammad over the course of some years from and through an angel from God himself. We had one guest say that this sounds like Middle East 6th century Mormonism. We'll be right back. Christ Academy is a two-week residential program for high school-aged men on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Here's the director of Christ Academy, Brian Gurman.
The students at Christ Academy live in the dorms as a seminarian would. They study under the seminary professors, and they worship in Kramer Chapel. And it is literally taking the seminary experience and getting a good taste of it for those 2 weeks. And what they learn in the classroom, then they experience in Kramer Chapel, as that is really the center of the experience, just as it is throughout the academic year here on campus as well.
At Christ Academy, high school-aged men explore the possibility of someday becoming a pastor. Christ Academy takes place June the 17th through the 30th on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. Look for the Christ Academy logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, 1-800-481-2155.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Has your pastor ever accused you of being an adulterer, a murderer, or a thief? If not, he's not doing his job. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article for the Next Issues, Etc. journal called The Law's Accusations, and we'll send you a free complimentary copy. Just call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. Can you have the sweetness of the gospel without the sternness of God's holy law? Find out with the Issues, Etc. journal, 1-800-737-0172. Plus, the Wittenberg Trail feature details Chris Rosebro's journey from the man-made holiness of the Nazarene Church to the Christ-given holiness of the Reformation. 1-800-737-0172. Now, if you enjoy Issues Etc., the radio show, you need to get the Issues Etc. journal. 1-800-737-0172. Ask for a free complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. 10 more minutes in our conversation with Dr. Adam Francisco, taking your email on the issue of the Quran. Dr. Adam Francisco, assistant professor of history at Concordia College in Bronxville, New York, author of the forthcoming book, Martin Luther and Islam. Bob in Jefferson City, listening on KMCV, asks, can we say that Muslims seek to condemn non-Muslims, whereas Christians seek to save non-Christians? What do you make of his distinction there?
I think it's a very good distinction. Even though Christians and Jews and perhaps Zoroastrians are allowed to exist in Islam, they still are, in a sense, condemned because they are seen as second-class citizens within an Islamic society. But, and it seems fairly obvious from especially chapter 9 in the Quran that Muslims are out to denounce other religions, which they would call mushrikun, those who associate partners with God, whether it be in a Trinitarian conception or some other form of, or not some other form, but a form of polytheism. And so they're out to condemn that and to change the legal and political structures within given societies.
Well, that's key. You mentioned this before the break, and you brought it up again here. I think for a long time I was under the misconception that Islam is a proselytizing religion. In fact, I think I said it on the air a fair number of times that Islam is, like Christianity, is a proselytizing religion. But I've come to see in subsequent years, and you said it before, it's not so much an issue of trying to gain Islamic conversions as it is an attempt to simply have everyone living under the same Islamic rule or Islamic law. That proselytization, well, that might be icing on the cake, but it's good enough if you have everyone living under Sharia law.
Oh, yes, yes. In order to really grasp Islam, you cannot see it as being sort of one part of it being religious, one part of it being political. It's all a package deal. Islam is what Muslims attempt to do is establish a theocracy, And so, yes, there are Muslims who are engaged in missionary work. They call it dawah. But really what their chief goal is to start, is to change existing legal and political structures.
And if man is not in a lost condition, would it make any sense to talk about the Muslims through conversion, even the proselytizing version, as trying to seek the non-Muslims' salvation?
Oh, boy.
I mean, are they trying to save us by, if under the best possible circumstances, trying to convert a non-Muslim to Islam? Do they view this as the same way Christians would view as trying to save sinners?
That is a really good question. I don't think so. There are certainly, you know, just like in Christianity, you have Christianity and its doctrines, and you have Christians who conceive of their faith differently. It's the same for Islam. You have Islam and as it's classically understood, and then you have Muslims who, you know, modernist Muslims and traditionalists. And so some, especially more those of a more mystical bent, would see it as a way to at least bringing humankind or human beings more in line with the straight path. But certainly the majority don't see it as they're not out to save souls. They're out to change the world.
Grady in Lincoln, Nebraska, listens on KLCV, and he asks a simple question. Does the Quran promote violence?
Yes. Again, chapter 9 is the key chapter. Sayyid Qutb, who is he was a very famous Egyptian Muslim, was executed in Egypt in, I believe, maybe 1960s or 1970s, and he's sort of the godfather of the global jihad movement, and he's written he wrote a commentary on the Quran, which sits in probably every Islamic bookstore in the country, the very famous commentary, and he describes chapter 9 as the definitive or final teaching on how Muslims and Islam is to relate to non-Muslim, non-Islamic religion. And chapter 9 clearly states that infidels or non-believers, non-Muslims, are to be pursued until they submit to Islam.
And the scope of his influence, I've read articles about him in the Christian Research Journal. The scope of his influence, how would you characterize it?
One cannot underestimate his influence. His brother, Muhammad Qutb, was a tutor of Osama bin Laden. Sayyid Qutb's writings have been translated into numerous languages, and his books are found throughout Islamic bookstores throughout the world. He's extremely influential even today.
Laura, listening in St. Louis on KSIV, emails us. She says, I know that the Dome of the Rock is built on the Temple Mount, is a great holy place because Muhammad is supposed to have ascended into heaven from there, but I have heard that he was actually poisoned by a young Jewish girl he took as a wife after murdering her family before her eyes. Is this true?
There is a story in some of the biographical literature that Muhammad there was an attempted assassination. It's not in the Quran. Some Muslims do believe that poisoning was at least attempted, but it's a later tradition. So probably 9th century, early 9th century at the earliest, it begins to appear. Some suggest that the reason why he did die in 632 was because of this poisoning, but historians and scholars are divided over what he actually died of.
I guess the big question, that, as a final question, Dr. Francisco, a big question that occupies many people's mind, if I sit down with a Quran tonight and read it from cover to cover, honestly, on its plain, simple understanding of the text, will I come away with the popular conclusion that Islam is a religion of peace?
No. If you read it honestly, and don't even know of the teaching that this notion that some passages were revealed earlier and therefore later passages that contradict earlier ones abrogate them, even then, the majority of the passages that speak about relations with other faiths or other foreign religions, the strong majority of them urge the Muslims to go and battle against them. There are only a few passages that seem peaceful. For example, the famous one in chapter 2, verse 256, I believe, that says there is no compulsion in religion. That passage itself has been abrogated. even though it's quoted by everybody to try to prove that Islam is a tolerant religion, the question you could ask those who would use that passage is what the penalty is for apostasy in Islam. Is there really no compulsion in Islam? Because if you leave the Islamic faith in the Muslim world or in an Islamic country, the penalty is death. That doesn't seem like a very tolerant or non-compulsory religion to me.
1-800-737-0172 is the phone number for our resource line. You can use that number to request a free complimentary copy of the Next Issues, Etc. journal. We will be sending that journal out later this month. You can also use that number to join our monthly or annual donor program, the Issues, Etc. Reformation Club. Now, anyone who joins during the next 3 days up until Ash Wednesday will receive the new I Have Issues t-shirt. 1-800-737-0172, or simply write us at Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Dr. Adam Francisco is Assistant Professor of History at Concordia College in Bronxville, New York, and he's author of the forthcoming book, Martin Luther and Islam. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, no problem. It was good to talk to you.
Islam is, in the Quran, not that unique. I think our listeners got it earlier in this hour, and Dr. Francisco made it quite clear. What we're talking about here is a religion that appeals to our natural sensibilities, our natural way of thinking about God. If natural man living in the 6th century constructs a religion around what he assumes God to be, how he assumes God to operate, you're going to come up with something more or less like Islam. How different is that from all the other religions constructed in different lands in different times by different people who, working on their natural assumptions about who God is and what he does and how he deals with men, came up with religions that are essentially the same? You have to work your way toward God. Your job is obedience to God. How different from the true religion, which is Christianity, where God reveals himself in Jesus Christ, and God does not send Christ to show us the way, but to be the way of salvation through his perfect life, death, and resurrection, where it is not a religion about you working your way toward God, but God coming to you in grace and mercy and forgiveness with his death and resurrection as the atoning sacrifice for your sin, with a gift that is free from beginning to end, the gift of forgiveness and eternal life from God himself. That runs counter to how we think God ought to act, who we think God is, and how we think God ought to deal with us. But that is who the true God is, and that is how he deals with us in grace and mercy through his Son, Jesus Christ, crucified and risen again for us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen each week to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.